Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
And we are here for the Invested Podcast. We have been parsing Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger for years here. We're continuing that process.
Indeed.
Diving in a bit to my team's way of deciding what companies to focus on, and in particular, you know, where to spend our time understanding the weather that these companies are floating around in. It's quite a good metaphor now that we've gotten into it a bit.
I'm super into it.
Yeah. Last time we sort of talked about how there's a matrix, and that helps us figure out where to put our time here. And the matrix is on sort of the top part of the matrix. It's a question of, you know, how close is the price to the value? If the price is very low to the value, then that gets a high score, high value divided by price, and low value divided by price is a low. And then on the left side of the matrix is the level of understanding, and a high level of understanding and a low level of understanding are the two boxes there. So we end up with four boxes. Really, basically, the stock's on sale and we have a high understanding of it is what we would consider a four-star box. That's the upper left
side.
Well,
I liked when you called it sweet spot.
Oh, the sweet spot. It's our sweet spot. And then below that is a really high value to price proposition. The thing looks like it's really on sale, but we have a low level of understanding of it. And in that case, I've kind of denoted it's a three-star in terms of our attention, because we might have to put a lot of time into this. But if we do, this could be well worth it. This could be on sale and we could be buying a super great deal.
So mine says lots of time, but maybe worth it. And I have a circle around it because it's extra special.
Right on. And I guess to go back to the weather patterns, in the sweet spot, the weather's pretty well known. We know the weather there. So if something's going on, there's a storm going on, we understand pretty good if that's going to be a really long-term storm, short-term storm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how dangerous a storm is it? We got the weather pretty good there. If we go to a lower understanding, then we really don't. The weather here is unknown to us at the very lowest level of understanding. It's like, not even is this company hard to understand. It's, we don't know anything about the weather it's in, which means we don't know why it looks like it's on sale.
Yeah. And as we talked about, isn't that the point? Like, isn't that the stuff that where we all, like, as individual investors sit there going like, well, do I keep going with this and put more time into it? Or because it's going to be a lot of time, or do I move on? And as you astutely said, lots of time, but maybe worth it. So I think the obvious next question is, how do you know if it's worth it?
Let me give you an example of something that I didn't know anything about. So very low level of understanding. But when I saw Warren Buffett buying it and did an analysis very roughly on what I, you know, just using what the computer would generate in terms of whether it was on sale or not, or evaluation, I thought, holy smokes, Burlington Northern Santa Fe looks like it's really on sale, number one. So it would fit into the high value divided by price category. And second, the weather, what put it on sale, I know nothing about. I don't know anything about railroads.
This is a great example because I remember you telling me about it. This is a great example.
Yeah, so what goes into the decision to move forward here. Well, clearly part of the weather going on here is Warren Buffett's buying it. That that has a major influence on me in terms of the weather. This is something that is having a problem for one reason or another. If Buffett's correct in this, it's got a problem for one reason or another that's relatively short term. It's going to be a 3 year or less problem. It's something that's going to go away. The underlying moat of this company isn't being affected by this at all.
And, or that's what Buffett thinks. That doesn't...
No, this is what Buffett's thinking. I'm thinking. Yeah. I'm thinking this is what Buffett's thinking.
Exactly.
Or
exactly.
He wouldn't be buying it.
But Buffett makes mistakes, as we've talked about many times. So sure. You still have to know your own stuff.
Yeah. If you don't believe that, go read his annual letter where he talks about precision cast parts and what a mistake that was.
Yeah.
That's really, or Brown Shoes, another one where he just...
Or Berkshire
disaster.
Hathaway.
Or Berkshire Hathaway itself. Exactly. Exactly. So, okay, we've got some weather out here that is interesting, but we know nothing about why he's buying it. Why is everybody else selling it? Why do they hate it? What's going on out there? But I look at this company and I go, and this is why this matrix isn't structured of how hard it is to understand or how easy. It's just my level of understanding is high or low. Because I look at the railroad thing and I go, how hard could that be? I mean, these guys have trains, they move them on tracks. It's like, I can probably figure this out. Not only that, but my uncle and my grandfather, your great grandfather, worked on the railroad. And I've always been like, the railroad is sort of a family thing.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like that. There's a connection of some way that I actually would like to learn about railroads. I think that's the essence of it. Do you remember when you first got started in investing and you decided you think you would like to learn about Whole Foods? It's like,
Yeah. Okay. Well, this went a different way than I thought. So I thought you were going to talk about like whether or not it was relatively quick to understand or not, but you're talking about level of interest and fun and intriguingness.
Indeed.
Which to me is what investing practice is 100% about, like
100%.
Loving the stuff that you get to read about.
We could almost call this, I don't know if this is the right word, but something like this, we could call this box intrigued.
Yeah, we could, but there are surely things, companies that are less intriguing, like railroads for me, honestly, are not that intriguing. But
okay, fair enough.
Buffett buying it is intriguing. I'm sure that I could learn the railroad business. Why not learn about railroads, right? Like, it's not a natural interest of mine, but maybe it would be cool. It moves a huge amount of goods and services across the US and other countries every single day. It's probably something great to learn about. So that's kind of that point of like, I could do this or I could not. And I think that's just a judgment call. Like, how much interest is there? Does Buffett buying something make me want to go learn about a completely new industry that may or may not be interesting?
Now, I want to point something out. Let's call that I'm intrigued.
Mm-hmm.
I'm intrigued because Buffett's in it. I'm intrigued because my grandfather worked there. I'm intrigued because it looks like it's something not that hard to understand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm intrigued because this thing is on sale, maybe, right? Mm-hmm. So I've got a lot of reasons to be intrigued here. But notice, I really don't know if this is hard or not. My subjective judgment that this is going to be pretty something I can understand is really subjective at this stage. And I have discovered that things that look simple often are not.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes things that look hard are simple.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I'm not making a judgment here at this point about whether this is hard or easy. And I think that's important to note. We can postpone that.
Well, there is a little bit, right? There's the part where you go like, I think I could learn this.
Sure. Sure. There's like, that, but that's a small dibble. That's a small. If we were to say what percentage that is, I would say under 10%. Way
that you
under
would
10%.
Not learn.
That I would say that this looks like it's pretty easy to learn would be less than 10% of my intrigueness.
Oh, I see. Here. I see.
Because I've learned that I don't have really great judgment at this point about whether that's going to be easy or hard. So just the notion that it might be adds a little weight. But if it was, it looks like it could be hard, but it's really on sale. I can tell you what actually happens in the real world here is that one of the other part of my team might look at this and go, no, I got this. Mm-hmm. Or this is easier than you think. Or it's worth it to dig in here. Or so something nudges it along.
I mean, that's a great point. So to extrapolate that into the real world for people who don't have a team and are like, you know, a mom doing this in the evenings, you could talk to friends and say, like, what do you know about this? Like, is this really hard? Like, maybe we don't have friends in every industry, but like we have friends in a lot of industries. If you think about who you know, you probably know somebody who is somewhat 6 degrees of separation away from whatever it is that you're thinking about and just get a sense.
That's a great idea. And you could also go to your mentor list.
Ah.
You know what your mentor list is? It's the library.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, see if any gurus are buying it. Totally different.
Well, I'm looking at the library. Like one of the great things I learned from the guy who wrote the innovation stack, McElvey, you know, he started Square or Block, was that your mentors don't have to even be people who are alive.
That's such
they can just
a good
be
point.
People who wrote deeply about a particular subject. So one of my mentors for banking was the guy that started Bank of America back in San Francisco.
I forgot that part of that book, but you're right. That was such a cool part where he wrote about several different mentors who had all passed long before and he had just read their writings. Yeah.
So shoot, I could go to a book on railroads by whoever has written the book on railroads.
And which takes some time, right? So that's time taken away from some other company. And that is still a decision. But I think that's where your qualification of intrigue comes in. Am I even intrigued enough to talk to somebody about this? Or even like look and see if there are books about it and how interesting they look when I read the description. Just even that level of 20 minutes. Mm.
I'll actually usually even take a preliminary step before I pull down a book is I'll go over to Seeking Alpha, which I think is such a resource. I think they're starting to charge for it now, but it used to be free.
They've been charging for a while, but there was still a lot of free stuff. I haven't looked at it in a while, but there was.
Gosh sakes. Yeah. I mean, you've got all this writing or just Google, you know, get to Wikipedia, railroads, wiki. Or Burlington Northern Santa Fe wiki page. And just a short amount of reading will help you either add to the intrigue or take it away. And so you just start there. You start reading and just go,
well, so tell
no.
the rest of the story about what you did with Burlington Northern.
Oh, well, I have some money, so instead of going to the library and getting a bunch of books, I went to Amazon and bought, I think, 33 books and had them sent here. And I just stacked them up and just started going through them.
That was in now, Jackson, right?
Yeah, that was in Jackson.
I think I remember you sitting in the living room and just reading, just like cranking, book after book, cranking railroads.
Intermodal, cranking railroads. And within a short period of time, I mean, book three or four, it started to become very repetitive. Right now I read fast and so do you read fast and that's a real skill that takes practice. If you'd like to be able to just zing through a lot of information and have sort of the key pieces pop out at you, you can learn that. It's a skill set. So go look at speed reading online and see if somebody's got a course or something. But I can read a lot of pages. I can read a 250-page book in a 3 or 4 hour flight. you know, cross country flight and I'll have it mm-hmm. done. In fact, I just read Dave Grohl's book. That was pretty good. On a flight from Atlanta to
sitting in the kitchen and I was like, oh, I didn't even know he wrote a book. It's a fascinating guy. I bet it's a good book.
He's a really good writer. He gets his voice in there very nicely.
Cool.
And it's fascinating what his life has been. So, yeah, you know, so Nirvana, Foo Fighters, I mean, yeah. Unbelievable. What a talent and what a life.
Yeah, he's the Julia Louis-Dreyfus of Nirvana, basically.
Exactly. And it's like that book is a three-hour book for a speed reader. And you can get all of it. So point being, with very few hours, you know, looking at Wiki, looking at Seeking Alpha, grabbing a book on this, reading a 10K, you can get a very good idea if this is going to be something that remains intriguing or it doesn't.
This would be a great time for me to pop in with ideas of how to get info without reading, because I can't read much right now. But
yeah, fair
unfortunately,
enough.
I don't have good tips about that because I haven't found a good way. I know there's a lot of audio options and there's a lot of way there are apps that will read web pages to you. There's apps that will read books to you. Even if they're not on audiobook, you can have them read. And a lot of those apps will do like 1.5 speed or 2x speed, as I know many people listen to our podcast on 1.5 speed, which good job, everybody. Get through it faster.
we that helps. Along.
Yeah, I haven't been able to do investing research for such a long time because I can't concentrate without getting brain fog, but I'm getting a little bit better and hopefully I'll be able to have better tips on that stuff for people as I move forward.
A really good partner. You have a great partner to work with.
You.
Me.
That's right.
I'm your daddy.
That's how I'm able to keep going with this, because you're teaching me in short bursts every week and I can do it.
I love it. It's great. I think you're handling this challenge so wonderfully. I am reminded the way you're handling this of this great seal, you know, this great warrior who would teach his SEAL teammates an attitude, and his attitude would be that he would share with them that you come to me and you say, because he was like a team leader, come to me and say, boss, this is happening that are bad. Right? The implication is it's bad. Mm-hmm. And his answer is good. Good. Now we can fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Good. Now we can do this.
Yeah.
So right on with long COVID. Good. So now we can get to work together like this, which is great.
Yeah, that's right. I'm trying not to move into toxic positivity around that stuff, but I also genuinely...
Toxic positivity is a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I really can't stand it. Yes.
It's a thing.
It's a thing that makes you feel like you're not good
enough.
But
I always forget the name of this book by this Freudian psychologist who was put into Birkenwald or Auschwitz or someplace and survived it. I think he called The Meaning of...
It's...
Viktor Frankl. Man's Search for Meaning. Viktor Frankl. It was a book about... In part, toxic positivity.
Mm-hmm.
It just killed people left and right.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I really find that people kind of laugh when I say this because it sounds negative, but I really find that stoicism is winning as far as mental models because it acknowledges reality while at the same time asking, how do you move forward? How can you make things better? So it's not a constant, this isn't happening, everything's not as bad as you think it is. Like, everything is as bad as you think it is, let's say. Maybe it's worse than you think it is. But you still have to, like, get up in the morning and move forward the next day. So it's the balance of, like, here's what it is, and what can I do to make things a little bit better? Learn more, move forward. I have found that to be extremely useful in real life and not toxic.
man, that is a life lesson I think you should share. I think you should share that. I think you got the credentials to share that.
The world's worst degree.
You got the t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. You got the t-shirt. Exactly. Yeah. Well, I've been thinking about it. Maybe I'll get some stuff out there when I can write and read again.
I mean, you're in good company with some. You're in good company with some people I really admire. I think Tim Ferriss is way down the road in terms of stoicism, and I think Joe.
Stoicism's gotten really popular. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's almost like a backlash to the Instagram, you know, your life is amazing, don't complain kind of thing.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
So toxic positivity, just for anybody who's like, what the heck is that? My favorite example is like there's a meme that goes around on Instagram, or at least used to, that says something like, you have the same number of hours in the day as the president. And you're supposed to take from that, like, yeah, if the president can do all these things, then I can do all these things. But the reality is you just end up feeling bad about yourself because you're not accomplishing as much as insert person who is important and doing lots of things. And the truth is that you don't have as many hours in the day as those people, because they invent hours by hiring other people to do things for them. So they have somebody cleaning their house and doing their laundry and picking up their kids and making their breakfast, lunch, and dinner and doing their bed and basically everything except for emotional stuff you can hire somebody to do. And they do. And they hire people to be assistants to those people because they need help. And that's how you buy more hours in the day. So it's toxic because it's a lie, and it just makes us feel bad about ourselves.
And I think one of the really great notions of stoicism is that your values are not what you say they are. They're what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something I've been teaching for many, many, many years. And I just really believe that that's true. Because if you look at what, as I teach it, because of the corporate world shares its values and its mission statement and how we value our employees and all this. And these companies can be among the most heinous bunch of horrible places to work in the world.
Yeah.
And yeah, they have these wonderful values on paper, but they don't do them, you know? So yeah. It's the old story, you know, you got to walk your talk. And that's straight up from the Stoics. And if you have values, and if you have values, then, and you live them, then you have virtue. And if you have virtue, then you have happiness from their perspective.
Yeah, great point. And I think furthermore, their view was that talk doesn't matter at all. There's no point in even talking about your values, except maybe to figure out what they are, debate philosophically between them. But they weren't going around announcing to other people because it didn't matter. And I think that's something that people are drawn to these days, because so many people talk. I mean, we're sitting here talking, you know, we can be part of that list of people who talk about what they do. And I think the good thing is we actually do what we talk about, but a lot of people don't. And that's what feels very fake to all of us.
You hear things like, somebody saying like, look, Danielle, I'm not going to lie. You know, the way this goes is A, B, C, D, E, F. Oh, you're not going to lie this time. Well, okay. what is that? In other words, if you don't say that preceding every other statement, then what am I thinking? Oh, now you're lying. Okay. So.
All right. Well, we've gotten way off of our matrix here.
We have a bit. But honestly, not really far off of our mission, because ultimately our mission is about happiness, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
That financial independence is what gives you the ability to pursue the life you want to pursue, to follow, you know, your dharma, follow your dream, which obviously has a substantial impact on one's happiness. And more, I think in this world, we're seeing people rejecting the notion that that it's a good life to just make a living.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
that's sufficient. And we can, if that's true, we can forgive our forefathers coming out of World War II thinking, you know, it's a good life just to make a living, because they've come from something so much more horrible than that. But at the end of the day, you know, there's a lot of rejection of that idea that, you know, just having a job selling Coca-Cola or something isn't enough. It's not sufficient, that we want to matter. And, you know, and I think that notion that we want to matter brings us right back into the concepts we teach. If you can get yourself to a point where you're financially independent enough, where you can do what you think you should be doing, then I think it's very likely you're going to matter. And I mean more than matter to your children and your wife, you know, I mean, or your husband. And maybe that's why we all get married and have kids, is because we want to matter. And that's the only place where we matter.
But it's a reason, it's a reason to make this education matter. I had zero interest in financial world, period, stock market, whatever, because I felt like it didn't matter. It was just money.
Right.
And money is important, but it didn't really matter to me. And when I connected it to my values, being able to put money in companies that are doing things I want to support, literally, then it mattered. And then, like, the money is a hugely important part of it that also matters to the future. Mm-hmm. But in the day-to-day, you know, am I going to make time for this kind of way? I need to feel that it matters in a bigger way than just for me. And that's really what got me into it. So I think it's hugely important to people who are not naturally into the numbers or finance, which is a heck of a lot of people who are like me.
Oh, the vast, vast majority.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, we've taught thousands and thousands of people how to do this, but the truth is 50 million people need to do this just in America alone. And, you know, we're not even a drop in that bucket.
That's true.
Because of the reticence for most people to think they could even do this.
Yeah. Which is totally understandable. Okay. So we were like way off.
So that, you know,
you go read Invested. That's why I wrote the book, literally, because there was not another book for me to pick up that spoke to me.
Coming back then to the right side of the matrix.
Yeah, but I have a bunch of questions about that. So I think we need to get into it next time.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, we basically are at the sweet spot on the upper left, and at the intriguing, for lack of a better term, box on the lower left. Mm-hmm. And we know the upper right is watch list. That's
which
where the price
list
is too high.
Which list, watch list, yeah.
You can understand them. And we know that bottom right is a no.
Yeah, but
we got better things to do.
That's the one that we ended on last time, and that's the one that we're going to end on again this time, because I have questions about that.
Oh, all right. Then we'll get back to the no's.
Exactly.
Which look like nothing more to see here. Move on.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
Maybe not. Okay. Well, let's talk about that.
Okay.
See
Thanks,
you next
everybody.
Time.
Bye.
Time to go play. Hi guys, thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding, they really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice, because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.